Welcome to the Starving Writer Podcast. I'm Jess, and I am not an expert. I don't have any amazing tricks up my sleeve that will help you become the next New York Times bestseller. I don't have any secrets or quick fixes that will move you to the fast track. If you're looking for shortcuts or insider information on how to become the next J.K. Rowling or E.L. James, this isn't the podcast for you. However, if being a writer isn't something you choose, but something you are, if you write because you can't not write, because doing something, anything different makes you feel like a shell of yourself, then you're in the right place. That's where I am. And I'm going to share with you all of my struggles. Every low down dirty detail, every failure that I face, as I wade through the hot mess of confusion and self-doubt, on my way to becoming the thing I've been dreaming of since I was 7 years old, a writer. Let me be clear. I am going to make mistakes. I'm going to fail. I'm going to fall on my face so many times that I'll think about giving up, about giving in. But I won't do it. And it's my hope that you won't either. Episode 2. You need a cheerleader. Can you remember the first story you ever wrote? The first time the muse hit and the world opened up at your fingertips? I can. I was in third grade. I don't remember the exact assignment, but I think we were supposed to write about our families. At that time, my home life was a turbulent mess. And I didn't want any of my fellow classmates to know anything about the painful world I lived in. So I created my own. In my world, there were no screams hidden behind locked doors, no muffled cries, no angry voices. Nope. In my world, my sister and I were heirs to a magical kingdom on the planet Jupiter. Princesses living in a world full of enchantment. Our land was inhabited by life-size orange gummy bear creatures. They were happy, playful, and we were beloved by all of our people. That is until the evil yellow gummy creatures from a neighboring planet kidnapped us and took us to a planet where magic was only make-believe. The planet Earth. I remember sitting on the couch with my sister, reading her the three front and back pages I had already written. My hands hurt. My fingers ached. But when she giggled in all the right spots and sat up straighter during the scary ones, it didn't matter one bit. When I was through, she looked at me quizzically. "But it's not finished," she said. I told her my hands wouldn't let me finish the story. I mean, come on, it was the most I had ever written in my entire life. She nodded sagely and grabbed the pencil. "You tell it and I'll write it." This solution seemed brilliant to me at the time. Only later, once the assignment had been turned in, would I realize that the fact that the last three pages were written in a different hand only added credence to my teacher's belief that the story wasn't mine. I got a 70 on the assignment. The only reason I received a passing grade at all was because my mother decided to have a chat with the teacher in question. She'd read the story too. And the pride in her voice when she told me how talented I was would fuel the creative side of me for years to come. I filled notebook after notebook with stories and poems. Some of them were good, most of them were crap, and when I went through my emo stage during my early teens, those stories and poems transformed into a horrible barrage of angst-filled song lyrics. They were awful. Angry and neurotic, with a healthy dose of despair thrown in for good measure. I read a lot of Poe back then. By the time junior year hit, I was mostly done with that stage. I traded in my beloved Poe and Anne Rice novels for Jane Austen and Greek writers like Euripides and Homer. Song lyrics turned to poetry again, this time with an emphasis on the deeper meaning of life and the world around me. I never really did anything with them, but you could always find me jotting down a few lines in class once I was done with my assignments. I even spent my free time in the library writing. I wasn't writing for a purpose. I had no intention of sharing my poems or stories with anyone. But but I did share some with some trusted friends who asked. My writing was for me. It was a way to process, a way to escape, a way to just create. You know those moments when someone changes your entire worldview? There are these instances when someone says something to you or reacts to you in a way that you really hadn't expected, and suddenly your eyes are open and you can see 1,000 different possibilities you had never even considered before. This happened to me my senior year of high school. I was in one of my favorite teacher's classes, Miss Jackson, and for some reason I was reading aloud a poem I had written. It was one of my favorite pieces at the time, and I was really proud of it. I can't remember why I was reading a poem in her class. She taught history, but I was, and I read it, and the craziest thing happened. When I was finished, the most popular girl in school, who incidentally was sitting in the front row, looked at me like she'd never seen me before. Which, okay, maybe she hadn't, because trust me when I say I was not part of the popular crowd. But after reading that poem, she met my eyes and said something with so much conviction that it has stuck with me after all of these years. You have to become a writer. If you don't, then there's something seriously wrong with this world. She said it so matter of fact, so resolutely, and she said it in front of the entire class. I barely knew this girl. She was the cheerleader, the beautiful, peppy girl that all the boys liked and all the girls wanted to be friends with. I couldn't believe she had said that to me. Of course, my wallflower self blushed profusely and quickly took my seat again before any more attention could be drawn to me. Miss Jackson asked if she could keep the poem before the end of class. I wanted to tell her no, it was my only copy and I really liked the poem, but I felt really honored that she'd asked, so I said yes. I'm not sure if she still has it, but I never got it back. You have to become a writer. Those words struck something inside of me, and for the first time, I could see what writing could be for me. I saw book signings, public speaking events, and being interviewed. I saw myself in a coffee shop typing my way to a bestseller. I saw the joy that my writing brought to other people. I saw the joy that I got from creating every single day. It was a powerful vision. And for a second, I really, really wanted it. But then I heard the voices of some of the other people in my life. You can't just be a writer. You need something to fall back on. Writing is more of a hobby. You need to think about your career. Very few writers actually make money from it. Only the lucky ones get published. The list goes on and on and on. So I stifled that idea and took a more logical approach. Then life got in the way and my logical approach went to hell, but that's a story for another day. My point is, I didn't listen to that voice inside of me. The one insisting that I could make it as a writer. The one that told me to tell all the other voices to go to hell. Instead, I let others dictate my life for me, and I ended up as a single mom with 2 small kids working in a cubicle for 8 hours a day. That voice in my head from before was on a repeat, going, "You couldn't just listen to me, could ya?" I'd argue with it, say I had to stay, that I had to keep doing what I was doing because my children depended on me. But I knew this was a cop-out. So did that voice inside me. There were times when I could almost see her in her little cheerleading uniform, brow arch, hip jutted out to the side. Her arms would be folded tightly across her chest while her foot tapped impatiently on the floor in front of her. Most of the time, she'd just give me an annoyed eye roll, but sometimes I could hear her. "Girl, come on!" I didn't listen because I kept telling myself the same lines over and over again. I worked for a good company. There were benefits and the money was decent. Plus, there were opportunities to move up. Though all of these things were true, I knew there was really only one reason why I wasn't listening to that voice inside. I was afraid. Afraid that I wasn't good enough. That I wouldn't be one of the lucky ones. That writing was just my hobby. That I couldn't actually make money from it. Sound familiar? When my husband and I decided to get a divorce, something inside of me broke. I remember going to see my best friend afterwards, Dee. I was in a daze, caught inside of a crevice, desperately clinging to the edge. Above me was the land I'd known. Sure, it was rocky and barren, but it was the land I'd been comfortable in for the past 8 years. Below me, there was nothing but darkness, a deep, cavernous pit that stretched endlessly down to what I was certain was nothing but more darkness. I walked in, and one look from her was all it took for me to break down. I cried and cried, trying to get the words out, trying to tell her what happened, that it was over, that my life up to that point had been nothing, meaningless. And what was I going to do now? How was I going to get through this? How was I going to get my children through this? Dee let me cry for a bit. Then she looked at me in that way of hers. It was a look that said some hard truth was about to come out of her lips. I hated that look, but I also loved it. "Jess," she said, "you gotta let go, girl. You know what to do. You've just been too afraid to do it. He didn't do anything but hold you back. Now that he's gone, you can finally live your life for you." I wanted to argue with her. I wanted to tell her that she was wrong. He hadn't held me back. He'd loved me. She must have known this was what I was thinking, because with her next words, the world flipped upside down again, and I saw everything clearly for the second time in my life. "Name one time he's done something for you that didn't benefit him. Tell me one thing he's done to encourage your writing. Has he even read your writing?" There it was. The truth. Plain as day. No, he'd never read my writing. Not in the entire 8 years we'd been together. In that moment, I heard those voices from before. The ones telling me all the excuses I'd made for not pursuing my dream. I thought back to every conversation I'd had with him about it and realized that those voices sounded a lot like the responses I'd get from him. The wheels clicked together and fell into place, and I sat there, stunned into silence for a moment. My cheerleader gave me one of those girl looks, and the sadness that I'd been feeling fell away. It didn't happen fast. The pieces of it chipped away slowly as each memory of the two of us, now seen without the rose-colored lens, clarified. And I knew she was right. For the second time in my life, my view of the world shifted enough for me to see the possibilities that were now open to me. Sure, I was still sad, still hurt. But there was also this huge sense of relief and anticipation. I made a decision right then that I wasn't going to waste the second chance. I was going to go after my dreams. I was going to pursue my writing. My inner cheerleader jumped up for joy, chanting and clapping. Finally! In the few months afterwards, I worked hard to make this happen. But I realized almost immediately that I was going to need more than just a saucy teenager in a short skirt who lived inside my head. I needed support. People who believed in me. People who believed the same that I did. That I could make it. I started surrounding myself with them. First, I asked my sister, who had always been one of my champions, to move in and help me with the kids. Then, I started spending more time with Dee. In the early stages, I only shared my writing with those who championed me. There weren't that many of them, but their support and encouragement gave me the base that I needed in order to prepare myself for what was to come. The rejections, the echoes of, "Writing is only a hobby. You can't really make money from it. You can't support your family like this." And let me be the first to tell you that I am really glad that I took the time to do this. I definitely needed it. People are going to tell you that you can't do this. They're going to echo the same discouragement that I faced. Some of these people are going to be close to you. A parent, a sibling, a friend. When you finish your first short story and send it in, only for it to be rejected, your brain is going to automatically go to these people. It's going to say, "See? Told you this wouldn't work out." If you don't have a strong base of cheerleaders to go to during these moments, you're going to be tempted to quit. Don't. Call one of your cheerleaders. Let them remind you how much potential you have. Take the rejection for what it is, a chance to hone your craft, a chance to create something better. Do you want to know a secret? I don't know of one author, famous or otherwise, who ever got the first story they ever wrote published right out of the gate. In fact, James Patterson said that most of his short story submissions were rejected. Stephen King used to keep a nail on his wall for rejection letters. It got so full he had to replace it with a spike. Rejection and disappointment is part of the life of a writer. That's why you need a cheerleader. Find people who believe in you, even if it's just one person, and turn to them when that nasty voice of doubt starts creeping in. Let them remind you of the reasons why this will work out. Let them remind you of the reasons why you write. Then pick yourself up and keep going. Thank you for listening to episode 2 of the Starving Writer Podcast. All of the music for this episode can be found at bensound.com. That's www.bensound.com.